Hey everyone, it's Colin, how's it going? It's been a staple of our lives for decades, but as the internet continues its push to disrupt, well, everything, something has become very clear. Television, as we know it, will never be the same. Unlike some other forms of media or business models that have been revolutionized by the internet, changes to television seem to have been a bit more gradual, but they've definitely been just as concrete as with some of the other industries. I like to think of this major change as actually having been started with services like Netflix. Netflix has been around for a lot longer than many people realize, of course, starting out as a service offering DVDs by mail. Now, at first, it never really competed with television, but what it did do is took direct aim at local movie rental places and chains, similar to Blockbuster or Hollywood Video. And ultimately, it would put all of those local chains out of business. It offered a more convenient business model, much better pricing, and much better selection. So a lot of consumers started to go that way. Instead of simply going to the video store to get movies, they would just order them up over the internet, and within a day or two, they'd show up in their mailbox. Keep them as long as they want, send them back, no late fees, any of that kind of stuff. But as time went on, Netflix and other services that offer DVDs by mail, of which there are relatively few now, at least here in the United States, they went to also continue to push towards cost cutting and improving profitability. I mean, there were definitely concrete costs to buying DVDs and warehousing them and setting up operations around the country, mailing them out, just the postage costs alone. There were some very obvious costs to doing business. And so as time went on, this push into streaming content became more and more important. And Netflix, of course, went that direction where you could get the choice of, do you want to wait for it, you know, DVD by mail, Blu-ray by mail, or do you just want to watch it now if you've got a fast enough internet connection and a compatible device? And of course, now Netflix's business model has completely flipped around. The vast majority of its customers are watching streaming media, and relatively few people are actually still getting discs by mail. And that's pushed beyond the scope of movies, and that's where TV starts to get involved here. We've gotten movies as streaming media, and Netflix for a long time offered TV shows on DVDs, but then Netflix started getting those same TV shows and offering them as streaming as well, often in full seasons at a time. And as time went on, they would start to get fresher and fresher TV shows. It wasn't always just TV shows that had been, you know, broadcast years, if not decades prior and finally released to DVD, but rather TV shows that were really just fairly fresh and fairly new. And something interesting happened. More and more of these streaming services started to pop up, offering recent content. And a great example is Hulu. Hulu, for a very long time, like the big thing that got people to want to watch Hulu was it would often have brand new episodes of TV shows just a couple of days after they would originally air. And so you would see people starting to look at those services as being viable replacements for cable TV, and not just as a replacement for going to the movie store down the street and, you know, renting a DVD for the weekend, that sort of thing. And a lot of TV and movie studios were hesitant to jump on board with getting that content out there as quickly as it ended up happening. I mean, you look at the entire industry and how money is made in entertainment in general. And it's this thing called the long tail, where you make the most money at the very beginning, And then as time goes on, you make less and less money, but it's over a very long time frame. I mean, you think of movies that are decades old. Think of a movie like Back to the Future. I'm just going to pick a random example. Back to the Future, when it came out, obviously it's going to go into theaters and it's going to make a bunch of money in theaters. And the goal, of course, is to at least break even selling movie theater tickets versus how much it costs to make the film, with the ultimate desire to be vastly more profitable, even in a movie theater run. But the studios know they can't just show that same movie for a very long time in theaters. Ultimately, people are going to get burned down on it. They're going to want to watch something new. And so after a while, weeks if not months, the movie stops being shown in theaters, or it moves from the most popular theaters to maybe the less popular ones, the independents. And those theaters have to pay less money to show the movie. So the studio isn't making as much, but it's still making something. After a movie has had its kind of theatrical run, then it goes into home distribution. And that's when the DVDs and the Blu-rays and all that start popping up on store shelves. So if you really like the movie in the theater and you want to watch it again, you can buy it. Or that's also when that movie would become available for rental from, you know, traditionally places like Blockbuster, and of course, as time went on, into Netflix and other by-mail services. And so you'd see another kind of spike in revenue coming off of that movie over the long term. And then eventually you get into things like selling the movie for broadcast on TV, kind of like the TV movie of the week, you know, that nobody, I think, watches anymore. Or offering the movie for viewing on demand services like the cable TV on demand, or even things like having it be an in-flight movie on a long plane ride. You know, when you're sitting in your seat and you've got the seat back display there and you can pick through a bunch of movies to watch, the airline has to pay to play those movies, but that's just a small little revenue bump. So that's part of this thing called the long tail. But the long tail only works if you've got all of those distribution models in place. And so what I feel like we've been seeing over time, a lot of those distribution models start to break down. And the long tail premise, I've been talking about movies, but it applies to television largely as well, where you've got a brand new TV series first run. It's episodic, so you get a brand new episode every week and people tune in for it. And then during the summer, they're not producing episodes anymore. So what do? You go into reruns, and then some people will tune into those. And then after a long enough period of time, you will start to see that series, if it's popular enough, go into syndication, where it'll get picked up by other TV stations or cable networks. I mean, how often do you still see reruns of like Friends or Seinfeld on television? Both of those series are long out of production and they're not being shown on broadcast, you know, big name TV networks. They're original TV networks anymore. But a lot of the smaller independent networks have picked them up because, you know what, they still get some eyeballs, and some eyeballs watching those translates into ad revenue. So as things have changed with people watching TV, we've been seeing a breakdown in that kind of philosophy of the long tail. So it's forced studios to offer their content sooner and sooner to these streaming services. And people love switching to these streaming services simply because of the cost. They're way, way less expensive than a traditional cable or satellite TV package. Now, keep in mind, a lot of this is from my perspective of living here in the US. And it may be very, very different for you if you live elsewhere in the world. But ultimately, I think in the long term, everything's going to shake out to be pretty much about the same in these regards. So you look at a subscription to something like Netflix or Hulu, and even if you subscribe to a couple of those services, you're still saving money over the cost of a cable TV subscription. And famously, a lot of people say they only watch a few channels on cable TV instead of the entire lineup. So you look at, you know, those people who admit, well, you know, there's only like six or seven channels I actually like to watch. And then they look at how much money they're paying for a service like cable or satellite TV, And then they start looking into some of these streaming services, and they realize that the majority of what they want to watch is available on those services, so why wouldn't they switch? So studios have been forced to kind of catch up with the times, and that's why we've been seeing this content become fresher and fresher on these streaming networks. It's just because that's where the first viewing of a lot of this content is now starting to be taking place. So they've got to go where the money is, and the money is increasingly moving towards streaming. But that's not the end of it. You've also got the concept that those studios are ultimately selling their content to these streaming companies, Netflix, Hulu, many others. But they're not getting the full share of the profits from those streaming services, right? I mean, Netflix is charging people X amount of money per month, or same thing with Hulu, but the streaming services are keeping, you know, some of that money and only, you know, paying the studios a portion of it. So what we've been seeing now with this evolution is a major proliferation in streaming services, with many of them actually being owned and run by the studios themselves, the people who create the content, whether it's movies or TV or a mix of both, in terms of these big multimedia conglomerates. And they're doing it that way simply due to profit margin. Why sell your product at a lesser profit margin to somebody else than if you were to just sell it directly yourself? So over time, we're starting to see more and more like TV networks and movie studios propping up their own streaming services. Famously, Disney has announced that it's going to be starting its own service, and when it does, a lot of its content is going to be disappearing from other streaming service providers. Same thing with Discovery Networks. Fairly recently, as to when I'm filming this episode, they've announced that they're going to be offering their own streaming service, and all of their different, you know, traditional cable TV network content will be available on that for like $5 a month, or whatever they're going to decide the price will be. And we're starting to even see that with broadcast TV networks, which is really telling. A great example of which is CBS, with CBS On Demand or All Access. I can't quite remember the name of it, but they use Star Trek Discovery as kind of the carrot to get people to want to maybe sign up for that, because that is ultimately going to be more profitable than continuing to show some of these really popular programs on broadcast television. So with all these content providers switching to their own distribution networks and models, what are some of the knock-on effects? Well, the first one is that it's leaving some of those traditional in quotes, streaming service providers out in the cold. So Netflix and Hulu and the others, kind of the pioneers, now they're finding themselves with less content to be able to show, at least less fresh content, because it's getting sent to all these dedicated networks. So what are they doing? Well, they're deciding to get into that game themselves. And so we've been seeing over the last several years, services like Netflix and Amazon Prime in particular are actually producing their own content, whether they're one-off movies or TV series. Some of those TV series are brand new and fresh. Stranger Things is a good example. And some of them are reboots or rehashes or continuations of traditional TV series, some of which are newer, some of which are older. Fuller House, a good example there. Full House hasn't been on TV in decades, but there's still a decent amount of sentimentality amongst viewers who remember the original program. And so it got picked up as a sequel starring a lot of the same cast going off on new adventures. But that wasn't backed by any of the major, you know, TV networks. That was an entirely in-house production. So that's where I think things are really starting to diverge. And not only are they diverging in terms of content, but they're diverging in terms of platforms to watch. And so what we're starting to see is, in some ways, the benefits of switching to streaming, specifically the less costs angle to it, well, that's starting to get eaten up, and you've got to be really careful as to what you want to watch and where it's being shown to figure out if it still makes any sense. Now, if you have your content that you want to watch getting split amongst all these different platforms now, and they're all 5, 10, 15 bucks a month, well, if you have to subscribe to a few of them, suddenly you're starting to get closer to that cost of cable TV. Now, there's another thing that's going on, and that is its impacts on traditional television. First thing, of course, cable TV companies, they're simply running scared. Now, I mentioned that in some cases, you know, the cost to continue to watch cable TV can actually make sense if you've got a really diverse taste in content and it's being spread across all these streaming platforms. But as time goes on, the cable TV companies know that more and more of the really popular content is going to be reserved specifically for those streaming platforms because of that same profitability angle. Let's say it's Discovery Networks or Disney selling their content to Netflix to be shown to Netflix subscribers. Obviously, Disney can make more money if it sells that content directly to its own subscribers. And the same thing takes effect with cable TV. They end up having to sell that content to the cable TV networks, who then resell it at a profit to the end users. So why would a studio, a content producer, continue to basically sell its most popular content for less money to a cable TV provider than if it were to just stream it itself on its own service? So cable TV companies are kind of running scared because more and more people are moving towards streaming TV and subscribing less and less to cable TV. And cable TV has traditionally been quite popular and quite profitable for the cable TV companies. Now, the other thing, though, is a lot of cable TV companies, at least here in the US, are also internet service providers. And I feel like those services are where the majority of Americans get their home internet access from. Services like Google Fiber are really, really cool, and I would absolutely love to have that be an option everywhere, not just in this country, but around the world. But the fact is, at least in the US, it's fairly uncommon to get really good high-speed internet access with no data caps and really good speeds for a low cost. That's still a fairly new thing, and it's tough for some of those companies to break into different markets in the US. Generally, cable TV, traditional media companies still have a stranglehold on residential internet access. So you look at companies like Comcast, a great example, a company I love to hate. They are looking at declining profits on their cable TV division. So what are they going to do? Well, they could just get with the times and decide to offer even better service, better value for customers, engage customers to actually want to keep and have that service instead of hating the company, and really build themselves anew as internet service providers that offer really good service because that's ultimately the future. No, instead, they're trying to bury their heads in the sand, and instead, they're crippling their internet services. And in fact, with the whole demise of net neutrality here in the US, the key companies that were going towards trying to kill net neutrality were a lot of the cable TV companies, a lot of these traditional media companies, because they weren't willing to get with the times and move on with technology. They just wanted to go back to getting everybody to sign up for cable TV plans because they were more profitable. They were easier to manage, maintain. They didn't have to put as much money into equipment maintenance and upkeep and upgrades like they do with the internet service side of things. So it's got cable TV kind of freaking out, and we're going to see a major shift in terms of all of that. But the other thing, and this is one that actually has me legit pretty worried, is the effects on broadcast television. Now, full disclosure, I don't really watch TV, traditional TV, very much anymore. However, I'm very attuned to how the whole concept of public trust, radio frequency, and all that kind of works, the role of the FCC, what it was founded on, all of those things that go into broadcast television. And I can tell you that a lot of the recent changes and proposals that have been going on are only going to cause further consolidation or loss of service for broadcast TV. Now, broadcast TV is important for a few things. One, it's still relied on by a decent number of people who can't afford other forms of entertainment or getting information. A lot of people still can't afford home internet. A lot of people still can't afford streaming services or cable TV or anything like that. And so a lot of people just rely on broadcast television. In fact, even though I don't really watch too much TV anymore in terms of, you know, traditional services, and I've been a cord cutter for several years now. I actually can't even remember how long ago it was that I canceled my cable TV service. I still have an antenna hooked up to my TV. And that's because local channels offer valuable content, specifically in terms of news and current events going on in your local community. And so it's the impacts on that really have me kind of worried. And a lot of these changes and proposals coming down from the FCC are really going to threaten the ability for people to get information about what's going on locally to them if they can't otherwise afford a more expensive form of information gathering or entertainment. You know, if they can't afford high-speed internet, they can't afford a streaming service, they can't afford to subscribe to a newspaper or something like that, it's really going to cut a lot of those people out from being connected to their community. So some of these things that have been going on, some of the changes that have been proposed, the first one is this recent 600 megahertz spectrum auction, where the FCC basically told a bunch of TV stations, hey, we would like to sell the range of frequencies that a lot of you were broadcasting on over the air to sell to cell phone companies. And if you're willing to move your frequency to another part of the spectrum that isn't being sold, you'll get a portion of the money when the FCC goes to actually auction off those frequencies. And this actually happened once before in the mid-2000s, but it was parlayed into being part of the whole digital television switch, where it happened with the 700 megahertz band. A lot of TV stations moved from 700 to 600 megahertz, but they kind of needed to do that anyway because that's when analog TV broadcasts were being shut off and everyone had to broadcast in digital. So that was work they needed to do anyway. Now there's really no reason for them to need to switch frequencies other than simply because cell phone companies want better bandwidth. The lower the frequency, the lower the RF frequency, generally the better coverage you get over a certain amount of power. And so these lower band frequencies, 600 megahertz, 700 megahertz, are very valuable to cell phone companies because it lets them hit more subscribers and not have to put up quite as many cell towers. It ultimately saves them money and offers them better service. So the FCC kicks off this 600 megahertz auction. And some TV stations found it worth their while to buy the new equipment to switch to a different frequency and then take in some of that money off of the spectrum auction. The real losers with that spectrum auction, though, were small TV stations, the really small local ones, maybe ones in small towns. They couldn't afford to buy the new equipment to switch to a different frequency. And so what happens is we would actually see a lot of those stations get bought up by bigger stations only to be shut down. The bigger stations wouldn't then put the money into that small station to change their frequencies so they can continue operating. That wouldn't be profitable. A lot of those small stations were barely making a profit as it was. So they would get purchased and shut down, and then that big company would take that chunk of the spectrum money as profit. It was actually more profitable for them to buy up a station, shut it down, and then take that money and run effectively. So we're seeing a loss of service to a lot of these communities that otherwise doesn't really have access to a lot of that kind of information. Another thing that's been changing is the rollback of rules governing how easy it is or how straightforward it is for stations to even be bought and sold. This is really going to lead more and more towards consolidation. So we're going to see a lot of independent stations or even some smaller conglomerate kind of antenna stations get bought up by bigger conglomerates because the rules were changed to make it a lot easier to do that. Traditionally, those rules existed to try to give some kind of separation so that one company couldn't rule the airwaves, right? If you think of it from a news gathering kind of perspective, a lot of these stations, a lot of these broadcast stations have news programs. You don't necessarily want one or just a couple of companies nationwide dictating to their newsrooms how the news is going to be delivered. So with the loss of strict rules governing how many stations these companies can own and how close they can be to each other and all that, what we're starting to see is these conglomerates taking over, and they'll begin to dictate more and more kind of agendas to all of these stations as to how the news gets covered. Maybe they've got a bigger agenda going on that benefits their conglomerate at the expense of the local people, but they won't know that. The other thing also is the stations are no longer required to actually be broadcasting locally. What I mean by that is, obviously, you can't just stick one TV tower in the middle of the United States and have it cover coast to coast, right? You need to have a whole bunch of transmitters all over the US. And traditionally, what's been required is if you want to have a TV station in a specific area that covers a certain range, you need to actually have your studios be in vicinity of where you're broadcasting from. And again, that was to foster having that connection of the TV station being local to the community that it serves. So you've got a better chance of getting actual current events and stuff that's of interest to your audience being broadcast to them. And now that rule's been rolled back. So all of this leads towards consolidation in the broadcast TV market and the acceleration of moving more and more towards digital streaming. Digital streaming, of course, is going to be less personal. It's going to be more mass market type of orientation. So you're not going to see so much local interest. You're not going to see so much local news. You're going to have to try and seek that information out somewhere else. It ultimately just serves to try to commodify content as much as possible and really cut people out of the process. It doesn't matter where you live, you're just going to get that same content no matter what, whether it's relevant to where you live or not. And even some technical standards are trying to kind of cater to this, like upcoming revisions to the ATSC broadcast standard. That's the standard used to broadcast digital television here in the US over the air. An upcoming revision to it will, of course, allow for things like 4K broadcasts, which is kind of interesting. But another thing about it is the way that it's handling certain types of content. With this new revision to ATSC, the major content, like the actual programming itself, will still be delivered over the air. But there's an internet component to it, too, where the ATSC tuner, the actual tuner in your TV or your set-top box or whatever that gets the signal from over the air, it's also going to be connected to the internet. And the idea is that when it's time for a commercial break, that tuner can, instead of playing national ads, sometimes stream local ads from over the internet. Well, if it's doing that, then that still leads more credence to the idea of you don't really need a local, in quotes, broadcaster anymore, a local station to run those ads. You can have a national station running the actual programming and then get that local feel, if you even want to call it that, just by occasionally injecting local ads that get served up over the internet. So it makes you kind of wonder, is the FCC simply trying to get ahead of what's inevitably going to happen to broadcast TV? Or is it actually helping to spur its demise? Now, of course, the ultimate question, will traditional television, cable, or broadcast go away soon? I don't think it'll go away soon, and there's a couple of reasons for that. First is that it still does exist, and it still serves a purpose for those who can't afford maybe the streaming services. Maybe all they can do is just, you know, broadcast TV. Well, at least you can get some entertainment that way. And of course, you can get the news. And because that's ad supported, it's over the air and it's free. So I think it's going to take us some time to maybe get to a point where effectively that goes away. The other thing also has to do with habits. for literally decades, people would set up their schedules for their life around the concept of the TV schedule. They would arrange their lives and their work schedules and their hobbies and all of their other commitments sometimes around the favorite TV shows that they want to watch. And so you'll see that's going to be a very hard habit to break, right? A lot of people are used to, oh, well, my favorite show was on at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. They schedule their life around it. And they're used to doing that. So they're used to sitting down, you know, in front of the TV at that specific time, that specific day of the week, and tuning in to watch their favorite shows. And I think younger people are going to be easier for them to break that habit if they've never even gotten into it already, which I suspect a lot of them have. But for a lot of older folks, that's going to prove really difficult of a sell. And there's also something to be said for the deluge of choice. I don't know if there's a better term for it, but it's the idea where you kind of get into this paralysis when faced with so many options to pick from. I deal with this quite a bit, and it's partially why I actually like to keep music locally on my phone or on a USB flash drive in my car for playback. And I intentionally limit how much music I keep on my phone or on that flash drive. It's because sometimes, you know, when I'm faced with so many choices, it's really hard to decide. I can't really pick. I feel like this. Well, maybe I feel like that. I'm not sure. Do I want to listen to this now? Do I want to listen to that now? Sometimes it's easier just to have that choice be made for you. And so I could see a lot of people sitting down in front of a streaming service and you've got the menu and you're going through the menu and there's just a ton of choice there. And there's no imperative to pick what you want to watch right now. You could sit there for forever debating, oh, do I want to watch this? Do I want to watch that? Because it's all just on demand. It starts whenever you want. Some people, I think, just don't really feel like dealing with that. Some people, I think, just want to flop down in front of the TV at the end of the day and flip through the channels and find something that looks interesting to them at the time and just leave it there. And if that program ends up not being interesting or, you know, changes or ends or whatever, well, they just start flipping through the channels again to find something else. And so for, I think, the people who are used to that, it's going to take quite a while for them to get off of that model. Now, that said, they're probably also the type of people who are willing to pay to continue to have services that allow them to do that. So that's why I don't think cable TV is necessarily going away anytime soon. It's going to change in the meantime. A lot of cable TV services are actually starting to be run over the internet. Now, this is actually the case with my own parents, where they have internet service coming into the house, but they don't have that traditional cable TV cable that goes into the back of all the TVs. They've got a provider, you know, modem, and it provides Wi-Fi and internet service to the entire house as part of their internet package, but it also connects to a bunch of set-top boxes over Wi-Fi. And so when they're sitting there flipping through channels, they're really just flipping through live TV streams that are being delivered over the network instead of over traditional, you know, coax kind of cable like you would see even just a decade ago. So we'll start to see things move more and more in that direction. That's one way for providers to try to kind of consolidate and save some money. At least they've only got one infrastructure to manage that way. But it'll also herald moving more and more towards on-demand, weaning people off of the so-called linear lineup. And ultimately, I think it's just going to push people towards having to be more responsible for what content they want to watch and where they get it from. They'll have to be more attuned to all of that instead of subscribing to one service that just gives them everything. So do I think television as we know it is going to go away soon? No, but I definitely do think it'll go away eventually. So with all of that, I'm curious as to your thoughts. Are you a so-called cord cutter? How long ago did you do it? Are you actually finding yourself saving money, or has time gone on, you're finding yourself spending more and more, and maybe it wasn't quite worth it now? I'm just curious as to your thoughts about all this stuff, the direction that these industries are headed. Be sure to hit me up down in the comments below. Also, if you're interested in audio-only versions of these podcasts, I have them available as plain MP3 downloads for Patreon supporters at all contribution levels. As little as $1 a month gets you access. The episodes usually go up a few days before they show up on YouTube. And there's private RSS feed support, so you can throw it into the podcast player of your choice. It's just another way to help support the channel. I'd appreciate it if you would consider it. Anyway, if you like this one, I'd like a thumbs up. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @ThisDoesNotComp. And as always, thanks for watching.